Beth, thank you so very much. That was beautiful, and it's my favorite song of all times, and you did a wonderful job, as did the choir. I felt like we should be marching around the sanctuary as you were singing. That was just splendid. Most of us know that 50 years ago, on April 4th, 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on the balcony of the motel he was staying in Memphis, as he was supporting the work of striking sanitation workers. What many of us, myself included, either did not know or had forgotten is that exactly a year before that date and before his assassination, on April 4th, 1967, Dr. King preached a sermon or speech, whatever you want to call it, at Riverside Cathedral in New York City that was so controversial that Life magazine, which to the best of my knowledge and memory, never said anything controversial, but it said that this speech was slander that sounded like a script from Radio Hanoi. The Washington Post, not the most conservative paper in our country, said, "Dr. King has diminished his usefulness to his cause, to his country, and to his people." And those were some of the more favorable responses to that speech. Dr. King was speaking that day as part of the clergy and laity concerned group that had gathered religious leaders from across the nation who were opposed to the war in Vietnam. His address was entitled "Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence." This past spring, when I finally learned about this speech and read it, I was overwhelmed with its prophetic power, not only for his day, but it felt to me like even more for our day today. I was also heartbroken to realize that we have made so little progress toward achieving the goals Dr. King laid out and articulated in that particular speech. Long before making this speech, King had concluded that it would be a betrayal not only of his own faith and his calling as a minister and as a civil rights leader to not stand against the war in Vietnam, and particularly the repercussions of that war, because he believed that the war itself was driving the poor into deeper and deeper poverty, and that it was stripping the resources of our nation and both North Vietnam and South Vietnam. When King said in the speech, "We are called to speak for the weak, the powerless, the victims of our nation, and for those our nation calls enemies," he crossed a line few clergy had been willing to cross in such a public way during a time of war. He knew that this would be seen as inappropriate because our country had not yet learned that we can support and honor our troops even if we don't support a war in which our nation is involved. One of the few things we have learned since that war. King responded to his critics, which were already mounting before he gave this speech, with these words, "Though I often understand the source of their concern, I am nevertheless greatly saddened, for such questions mean that the inquirers have not really known me, not known my commitment or my calling. Indeed, their questions suggest that they also do not know the world in which we live. In light of such tragic misunderstandings, I deem it of support, of importance, he said, to try to state clearly why I believe that the path from Dexter Avenue Baptist Church in Montgomery, Alabama, where I started my pastorate, leads clearly, step by step, to this Riverside Sanctuary tonight. There is at the outset, he said, a very obvious connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, he said, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was great promise and hope for the poor, finally, not just for the black poor, but the white poor, through all of the poverty programs that had begun. They were experiments, they were hopes, they were new beginnings. Then came the buildup of the Vietnam War, and I watched each program broken and eviscerated as if it was something, some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. He went on to say, and I knew that America would never, ever invest the necessary funds or energies for rehabilitation of the poor so long as adventures like Vietnam continue to draw men and skills and money like some demonic, destructive suction tube. What a powerful metaphor. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and to attack it as such. Long before this speech, Dr. King had begun to develop plans for a national poor people's campaign, which would draw supporters from all over the country to Washington. His intention was for them to stay there until they got the leaders of this nation got woke, as some of us would say today, to the way our military expenditures and war efforts were, to use King's own descriptive words, a demonic, destructive suction tube. That was not only keeping the poor from being able to rise above their situation, but also sucking more and more people into deeper poverty. Dr. King thought we were a society gone mad and war 51 years ago, and thus sucking the nation's resources away from the poor. Imagine how heartbroken he would be today on this Memorial Day to see how many more safety net programs are being done away with day after day, and how much our military budget is increasing with each new day. Because of the effects of the military-industrial complex, the effects they are having on the poor, King called for a true revolution of values, which would lay hand on the war world order and say, war is no longer and can no longer be a way of settling differences between our nation and anyone. King said that only a tragic death wish would prevent us from reordering our priorities as a nation so that the pursuit of peace would take precedent over the pursuit of war. Imagine spending more money on peace than we spend on war. Despite the fact that some believed, especially at that time, that Dr. King was unpatriotic at best and a traitor at worst, I chose to focus on this particular speech on Memorial Day weekend because I hear Dr. King's words not as those of a traitor, but of a patriot whose faith in attempting to live out the values of Jesus of Nazareth, who called us to love not only our friends, but our enemies. King spent a good portion of this speech attempting to convey all that the Vietnam people had suffered during the endless years of warfare against one imperialist power after another. And then he said, "I should make it clear that while I have tried to give voice to the voiceless in Vietnam and to understand the arguments of those who are called enemy, I am as deeply concerned about our own troops as anything else. For it occurs to me," he said, "that what we are submitting them to in Vietnam is not simply the brutalizing process that goes on in any war where armies face each other and attempt to kill each other. We are also adding to the process of death a cynicism, for they must know after a short period of time that none of the things we claim to be fighting for are really involved. And the more sophisticated should surely realize that we as a nation are on the side of the wealthy and secure while we are creating a hell for the people in this country and in Vietnam." Despite the fact that Dr. King was assassinated a year to the day after making this particular speech, I still believe that the eloquence and truth of his words can inspire and motivate us to continue the work of attempting to discern, both individually and together, when our values and beliefs demand that we speak out against any attempt to resolve differences by war rather than by diplomacy, as we work diligently at understanding as well the intersectionality that he tried so desperately to teach us between militarism, racism, and poverty. He saw that long before anyone else. From the beginning of your life here in Greenville, members of this fellowship have always been there at the crucial moments in the history of this community and of many of those moments in the history of our nation. You have been present with your bodies, but you have also been present to speak your truth, regardless of the risk that you as individuals or you as a community of the fellowship understood it. And there were high costs at some times along the way. Those of you who have been here know those costs. As you prepare to enter a new moment in your life together with the arrival of your developmental minister, I can't help but think of Gil Rowland. He's been on my mind all week. He was here the few years I was in Greenville when I started my first pastorate. Just as any time that I'm out on the streets at a rally or a protest or a march, I can count on seeing your beautiful yellow shirts out there. And there's something about that that makes me feel safe and breathe a sigh of contentment. In the same way, during those years when I was here before, I always knew that Gil would be someone upon whom I could count. When I was defending my call to be the first woman minister in the area, he was in my corner pushing for me. When I was working on civil rights, particularly for the mentally ill and for those who were gay, not to mention our nation's opposition to the covert role that we were playing in Nicaragua and so many other Central American countries, Gil was there. Today I still feel Gil's presence, not only in my life, but in the life I see of this fellowship out in the community. I see him nodding his head and smiling with that twinkle he always would get in his eyes, as if he were approving of what you are doing, but also of the following words of his friend Martin, which I offer from him, from me, from Martin Luther King, as a word of challenge to you as you move into this next stage in your history. King said, "A time comes when silence is betrayal." That time has come for us. The truth of these words is beyond doubt, but the mission to which they call us is a most difficult mission. Even when pressed by the demands for inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in times of war. Nor does the human spirit, without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thoughts within one's own heart and in the surrounding world. Moreover, when the issues at hand seem as perplexing as they often do in the case of dreadful conflict, we are always on the verge of being mesmerized by uncertainty. But we must move on. We must speak with humility, a humility that is appropriate to our limited vision, but we must speak. We must move past indecision to action. We must find new ways to speak for peace and justice throughout the developing world, a world that King says borders on our own doors. How right he was. If we do not act, we shall surely be dragged down the long, dark, and shameful corridors of time that are reserved for those who possess power without compassion, might without morality, and strength without sight. Now, let us begin. Amen.